Rising Up with Sonali is hosted, written, and executive produced by Sonali Kohatkar. Anna Buss is the producer, technical director, and web and social media supervisor. Our theme music is by Grammy Award-winning band Gets Up. Like us on Facebook.com/RUWithSonali. That's the letters RU with Sonali. And follow us on Twitter.com/RUWithSonali. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can find all our programs archived and where you can get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Lady Sings the Blues, a tribute to Billie Holiday 2023. On Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland. The 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute brings together musicians of many genres to pay tribute to influential jazz singer and songwriter Billie Holiday. Performances feature Marsha Hocker, LaRonda Steele, Arietta Ward, and more. Again, that's the 16th annual Billie Holiday Tribute Night, Lady Sings the Blues, on Saturday, April 8th, from 8 p.m. to 10:45 p.m. at the Alberta Rose Theater, 3000 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are tuned in to Civic Cypher.
Whole lot to stick around for, per usual. Of course, we have to talk about the indictment of the former president of the United States. We didn't want to talk about that, but we have to, so we will. There's no getting away from it. That just kind of... It's not really what we need to talk about, but it kind of is at the same time because that's what's happening in this country. And so,
yeah, it'd be hard to act like it didn't happen.
Right.
He was the former president of the United States, no matter what his name is. So that's newsworthy.
Exactly. And so we're going to do that. And then for the second part of the show, we're going to illuminate some double standards that we have seen. Well, I mean, we see double standards all the time, but some double standards that are in some popular stories that we either haven't gotten to, that we wanted to touch on recently, or that have come up this week. And so there's a lot of that, including the treatment of the former president. You can imagine if that was Obama, might have played out slightly differently, but you know, we'll get there.
The news might be covering it a little differently too.
We'll get there. We're also going to be talking about Queen Khalifa. For those of you in California or otherwise familiar with the magical place called California, you may not know that California was named after a black woman. When I found that out, I thought that was incredible. And this isn't anything that is not well documented. You can research it yourself. It's just not common knowledge. So I can't wait to share that with you in our Way Black History Fact, as well as some other really exciting things too, including a brand new Baba becoming a better ally. So stay tuned for that as well. Mm-hmm. But first and foremost, let's discuss some really exciting Ebony Excellence.
Shall we?
I think we shall. So today's Ebony Excellence, sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Media, and this reading comes from Afrotech Magazine. Victor Glover is set to become the first black man NASA sends to the moon. Now, if we don't applaud that, I don't know who will. Well, Afrotech obviously will, but man, what an awesome thing to to be known for and to see happen. So
seems pretty late in history for that to be a first steal.
I thought the same thing, but you know, better late than never. Yeah. Man. You know, we've been to the moon too, you know? So anyway, I'll read. A new space exploration, Artemis II, has been announced by NASA and the Canadian Space Agency. It will include Commander Reid Wiseman, pilot Victor Glover, Mission Specialist 1, Christina Hammock, Koch, and Mission Specialist 2, Jeremy Hansen. In a 10-day flight test, they will prove that humans can live in space and validate the Orion spacecraft's life support systems. The mission also establishes a historic precedent in space, as Glover will become the first Black man on a lunar mission. Director Vanessa Weitsch, Director Vanessa Weitsch of NASA said, for the first time in more than 50 years, these individuals, the Artemis II crew, will be the first humans to fly to the vicinity of the moon. Among the crew are the first woman and the first person of color and the first Canadian on a lunar mission. And all four astronauts will represent the best of humanity as they explore the benefit for all. Now, obviously, the best person or the first person of color is significant for all people of color, but I would like to once again state first Black person, and that is special. So again, Victor Glover, congratulations, and you made us all proud. Now, how much of this Donald Trump stuff did you see?
So that's an interesting question because we don't voluntarily consume him
right
around these parts. So I've seen as much as any casual person has seen. I haven't dug in. I haven't tuned in. I haven't been in search of.
Right.
But, you know, it's the type of thing that is, it's the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's newsworthy. It's, again, you, for most of my life, regardless of your stance, regardless of the way that you voted, regardless of your politics, you respected the person in the position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there was him.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And it changed not just how people like me kind of no longer respected the person in the position, mm-hmm. but polarized the country in a way that seems irreparable at this point as we watch, you know, our policymakers snowboard down a hill of overt racism and bigotry and
it can't wait.
If there's a time machine available to help them get to the bottom of racism slope faster, trust me, they would be in there. Right. So you talk about the very obvious differences in the way this story is being covered,
mm-hmm.
differences in the way he's being treated and somehow made out to be a martyr.
Mm-hmm.
It's laughable, except it's not. Like we'd laugh. Once upon a time, we'd laugh at fringe conspiracy theorist that would push stuff in front of us that the collective thought was ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
so we could laugh, you know. But I watch how some of his cohorts and colleagues are operating in the space now, even people who he's been flagrant and blatantly disrespectful to, but they know it's in their best political interest to still parrot his policy, parrot his way of thinking, and pretend that they're supportive of his, like people who he's talked bad about their wives and them.
Ugh.
And they're still like out there, you know, in support of this guy who they know can help, you know, put some gasoline on their political fire. They're pushing for things that once upon a time we would have said, that's so ridiculous. There's no way that can actually happen. Except now we have so many examples that not only could it, but it would. Like when he announced his candidacy, I thought it was ridiculous. So I laughed because there's no way he can be the, oh. So here we are.
Yeah.
And you brought up something when we were discussing this topic. And I'd love to hear your voice articulate this. How on earth would this be covered? And how on earth would they feel if the former president that had just been indicted of no matter what the crime was, it could be jaywalking, was Barack Hussein Obama.
How about that? Okay, I'm glad that you mentioned that because I definitely want to talk about that. But before I get there, you brought something up that I want to touch on. You talked about kind of respecting the office, and we'll get there. When I was first able to vote, I voted for, I believe it was John Kerry. Sound right?
Yeah.
And
Democratic candidate George, lost to George Bush.
Yeah, George Bush the second ended up winning. And
George W.
Exactly. And he won again. So he was a two-term president. So when I graduated high school, all the way until Obama came along, that was what it was. I was not a fan of George W. Bush. I don't think he was a particularly, I can't pretend to have been as involved in politics or policies or understanding what was going on as he was, but I recognize that, you know, 9/11, he was a president, you know, that sort of stuff, right? I thought that he was an embarrassment, the way that he spoke. I didn't really realize that I never saw anything presidential about him. But one thing I will say to your point is that when he came to Arizona, right, he wasn't such an embarrassment that I was not excited that he was coming to the city.
Had we met him, we would have shook his hand.
Exactly. And I would have gave him the respect that the office warranted, right? I would have taken a picture with him. You know, we disagree on most everything, but you know, when it was time to go to war, you did your job, you know, and beyond that, you're the president, right? You don't speak the way I would have spoken. And, you know, we've had a couple of cringe moments here and there, but for the most part, you seem like a decent man. And I hope that before your life is over, you come to see things a little bit more like people like me, so that you have a little bit more of a universal view.
I also think we both understood, and I think a lot of us understand, you don't have to think like me to be a decent man.
There, yeah, perfect.
You know what I mean? So yeah, I would love if you thought more like me, because you were in my mind back then, he was so far extreme the other way, but oh my goodness,
nah, I've seen that
he was not.
And that's what I'm getting at, because like you said, I would have shook his hand. I would have snapped a picture with him. Another person, a name that I know that you, our listeners, would know, is McCain, John McCain. Now, remember, John McCain is from Arizona. That's where I'm from, right? So John McCain was another person, to your point, Q, who was on the whole other side of the aisle. We just did not have similar politics at all. But there's no way anybody could convince me ever that that wasn't a decent man. And I think that I have an example that would check that box for just about anybody.
Yeah, I have a few as well.
But the one that comes to mind is when he conceded defeat to Obama, he made it a point to say that this night, this historic night, must be particularly special for the African American people in this country. The way that he said it and his words, I don't know exactly what he said, but that was effectually what he was.
The semantics don't matter.
Right. The way that he said that, let me know, that's a decent man. Right. Because obviously the election wasn't about race. Later on, there was
This is America.
Well, sure. For some people it was, but the election in theory is about politics, right? Yeah. But a great example of what I meant when I said the election wasn't about races, 4 years later, Obama ran against, his name is Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney was recorded at a Republican meeting somewhere, but his voice was recorded. And he said something like, you know, there's like 53% of the country that's never going to vote for us because they're this, that, and third, and they're just never going to vote over here. So we can't worry about them. That's never going to happen, right? And it, the way he was describing those of us who would never vote for him was very dismissive, right? Now, in hindsight, it wasn't that bad. But, you know, at the time, it felt very dismissive. And I tweeted something. This was back when we still had Twitter, right? By the way, if you haven't listened to a couple of episodes, we deleted our Twitters because we're not the one, nor are we the two. But anyway, I tweeted something at the time and I said, you know what? I'm not voting for Obama because he's black. I'm voting for Obama because I'm black. And the weight of that message translated. And I remember that got retweeted a ton of times. There was like all these news outlets tweeting and everything like that. And folks were reaching out. It was really exciting because way back when, you know, I didn't have a nationally syndicated show where thoughts like that are just kind of roll off the tongue. But that was kind of the feeling I had when McCain was running. So when I say it wasn't race-based per se, more politics based. Yeah, it was exciting that Obama was black, but there's been black people who run for president. I would never vote for them. If Clarence Thomas decided that he didn't want to be a Supreme Court justice anymore and wanted to run for president, there's absolutely no way in the world I would ever vote for that man. All skin folk ain't kidding folk. This is something that we say over here. Now, the man of the hour. So, you know, we realize that you're probably listening to this and it's been a few days since this stuff has been announced. But we're a weekly show, so we only get to get in your ear once a week. So we're going to start at the beginning. Prior to the indictment, there was, so here's a message, or rather a article from Yahoo News. There was a poll that showed that President Trump was slightly ahead of Ron DeSantis, right? After the indictment charge was brought forth, Trump's numbers were boosted as a result of that. So it really like galvanized and fired up his base. I suspect largely because of what you said, Q, which is how there are different media outlets covering it differently, right?
All media outlets are covering it differently. Mm-hmm. Like this, it's strange because it's not even about left or right. Mm-hmm. All media outlets are covering this differently than they would really any other president. Mm-hmm. But very, very specifically, the one who everyone who hears my voice knows I'm talking about.
You talking about Fox?
No. The former president.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying.
Okay. Every news outlet would be covering the indictment of Barack Obama different than they are the indictment and arrest of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. People were out of their mind offended when President Obama wore a suit that wasn't mm-hmm. black or blue. Like tan suit, really offended, like angry.
It's not presidential. It's so funny because—
So could you ever imagine if he had 43 indictments?
34. Okay. But yeah.
Forgive me, but again, the semantics. If he had two, if he had one, if he jaywalked and the police pulled him over, it'd be national news and it'd be spoken about in a different tone than—
You know what they would say? I know what you mean, because they would say it's not presidential, right? Because that was the thing that they always brought forth, especially right-leaning news outlets. They brought that forth when describing Obama's behavior or his policy, whatever, however he dealt with people. Remember, he would do a fist jab as he was, fist bump as he was campaigning. You know, he'd just kind of do this fist bump. Everybody wanted to fist bump Obama. I remember a Fox News report was like, is it a fist bump or a terrorist fist jab? Like the how they took it went all the way to the extreme to try to, make that connection, you know, that somehow Obama was a terrorist and bad for the country. And you got to remember the climate of the country at the time. We're still kind of reeling from 9/11. You know, a lot of terrorism talk is still very much in the air. So, yeah, the coverage, night and day difference, you know what I mean? And I think that that speaks to the double standard in this country, right? But back to this arraignment. So one of the other things that happened is the day of his arrest, you know, of course, he got to mosey in there late. He was supposed to be there at like 11 a.m. He got there after 1. And we know how that's different over here, right? But, you know, he's not us. So he gets to walk in late. Marjorie Taylor Greene went out there and she spoke to, you know, a crowd, but she had a bullhorn and there was a lot of people protesting with whistles. I need to figure out the names of the guys that were out there protesting with the whistles, and they were drowning out her speeches.
Great job.
Yeah, it was amazing. They really deserve a shout out on the show. But I remember seeing the video. I think, was it Sean King posted it?
Several people.
Okay, good. But yeah, a maneuver, if I ever seen one, right? So yeah, her speech got drowned out. But prior to her speaking, she gave an interview inside of like an SUV or something. And she compared Trump's arrest to, she compared him to like Nelson Mandela and to Jesus. Did you see that?
I read that. I didn't see it. Yeah. The sound of her voice makes, you know what I mean? Makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So I don't deal in that space.
Yeah.
Cause I often have to wonder, these people are either the most ignorant people in the history of people. And I say even more so than those who convinced themselves that we were proper property.
Mm-hmm.
Because I really think those people believed, as wrong as they were, that we were actually beneath them. I think they were indoctrinated in a way where they actually thought it was okay. As we've discussed before, these people had their children at lynchings.
Mm-hmm.
Because even those quote unquote decent among them thought that that was normal. We're supposed to be a more progressed people now, a more enlightened people now. So our current political landscape with our extreme right conservatives, our extreme MAGA conservatives, our extreme Trump conservatives, they're either the most grossly, I don't want to say ignorant, because ignorant might make you think I just mean misinformed. I mean stupid. Like, I know that's not proper.
No.
I mean like dumb.
Yeah.
I don't mean like intelligent people that don't have the information. No, I mean like.
The one thing that happens in a good number of instances is that they're dumb people who have, they are very articulate. And they articulate the dumb stuff in such a way that other dumb people perceive it as being intelligent.
Yeah, I'm not talking about those people, though.
Okay,
go ahead. Those people are intelligent enough
to be articulate,
to make hate and divisiveness and racism and bigotry sound okay.
Okay.
Because they articulate it properly. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard her speech?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like she's learned. Right? And I'm not saying this to be mean, but it's like you're either that or you're despicably evil.
Yeah.
Because almost everything she says is buried and drenched and drowned in so much hate,
mm-hmm.
and so much just mean, callous, bigoted, racist crap.
Yeah.
And there are tens of millions of people. Shout to the people that drowned her out, because there are as many people as showed up to drown her out that will talk loud as that, but with the same message that she's delivering.
Yeah.
And once upon a time, I think the entire country would have thought that we were beyond that.
Yeah.
You know, even those who parrot the same politics, who cringe at the idea of being labeled racist, because they do understand that that's a bad thing.
I don't think people like her do.
Yeah.
I don't think they feel that way.
I think they wear
the title of racist proudly. I think they platform on it. I think they campaign on it intentionally. Yeah. That is a different thing, man. It is a very, very, I wish you guys could see my face. It is a very, very discouraging thing that this is the state of our union.
So, speaking of which, so what happened that day after she got chased out of there by all those loud whistles, Donald Trump went in, pled not guilty, and then he flew back to Florida and he talked bad about everybody and their mama, right? Well, he talked bad about the DA, of course, but then he talked about the judge and the judge's wife and the judge's daughter.
Who gets to do that?
Exactly, and that's what I was saying.
Because Ramses would have been held in contempt of court.
Yeah, if Obama
had he done something like that.
Exactly. So it really does go to show that there is a sort of double standard there. Hopefully there will be a gag order because this guy is super duper off the chain. But then, as if that weren't enough, he jumps on his boring social media site and then he tweets that he wants to defund the federal police. This part comes from NBC News. Trump and a handful of allies in the Republican-led House favor cutting money for the Justice Department and FBI ahead of September 30th deadline to defund the government. The deadline to fund the government. So he wants his allies, which there aren't enough to actually make this happen, so don't worry.
But well, I'm worried because I don't know if that's true.
Well, no, I did a little research.
However, this is, and I have to get this out, this is a sign that Ramses and I and people like us, we're too kind. Because I remember us having conversations about defund the police and kind of grimacing a little bit like, man, I wish we were delivering this message differently so that it could be received. Mm-hmm. And they're showing us they'll receive anything as long as they're the ones saying it.
Yeah.
If it's coming from us, it does not matter how it's articulate and polished it is. Nope. It's crap.
Yeah.
They will repurpose the same message. They won't even reword it. And they will receive it and scream it loudly like we weren't saying the same thing a year ago.
It's
disgusting.
It's wild to see that happen, but you're not wrong. You're absolutely right. So this is still a developing story as we record this episode. So we'll keep following it and we'll let you know if it's worth talking about, right?
And now, Proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
For those of you just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. Welcome back to Civic Cypher.
Stay tuned. We got a lot more Civic Cypher in store for you. For those that were around for the first part of the show, we were talking about the indictment of the former president of the United States of America. And we alluded to some of the obvious double standards that were present in that situation.
I feel like I see a theme coming here.
Yeah, no, we got a lot more to talk about. There's a lot of news that we don't get to cover on this show. Unfortunately, there's so much that fits underneath this umbrella that we just can't get to. We're an hour a week show, but there's a few stories that we're going to talk about where that double standard is on full display for everyone to see. So if you're not aware, stay tuned, listen up, and then you'll be able to see exactly how this country treats people differently according to how they look. But before we get there, it is time to be a Baba, become a better ally. Today's Baba is sponsored by Major Threads. For the finest in quality sportswear, check majorthreads.com. And for today's Baba, we have something that's a little different. It's more of a personal favor. We always say that the show is growing, continues to grow with your support. We always ask if you want to make donations to hit the website and do that. And there's a number of ways that you can support this show if you believe in what we're trying to do, which is educate people, inform people, empower people, and create stronger allies. Well, Q had the most brilliant idea of all time.
Sometimes you guys got to take Ramses with a grain of salt,
man,
especially when he's talking about me, because he, you know what I'm saying? Like, he goes far.
It was brilliant.
Sure.
It was brilliant. And he thought we should start live streaming the recordings of the show, right? So for folks that
I think we should start live streaming in general.
Okay. That too. Yeah, you did say that. But
because we want to be engaged with you guys. Live streaming the recording is cool, but then we're doing a job and can't interact with you. I want to have live content where we're talking to and engaging with you guys.
Exactly. And all that's coming. But we got all the live stream stuff set up. And so for folks that want to jump on with us, interact with us in real time, send questions along, just kind of talk with us as we have these conversations, subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's very simple. youtube.com/civiccipher. That's CIBICCIPHER. There's no Y's in there. And for those that can't donate, watch the live stream or subscribe to the YouTube channel, because that also helps monetize this show.
Or do both.
All right. So now let's talk about the double standard we live with. All right. The most obvious, flagrant, recent example comes from the world of sports. There are two people named Angel Reese, and she faced off against a person named Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
What I know is that Angel Reese is a black woman,
mm-hmm.
and that Caitlin Clark is a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
But you could tell the story a lot better than I could, so why don't you set us up?
Angel Reese, the Bayou Barbie.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
Tournament MVP for the NCAA Women's Tournament in March Madness. Most double-doubles in the history of the NCAA tournament. First-team All-American.
Go ahead.
Now national champion.
Go ahead.
However, Miss Caitlin Clark, guard, Iowa, Big Ten Player of the Year, might be National Player of the Year when it's all said and done, incredible basketball player, most points, I think, in the history of the tournament, or at least in the history of a single season for the NCAA. Different style of coverage, but not different style of play. Miss Caitlin Clark is not black. Miss Angel Reese is. And that's where the double standard starts. Because Miss Caitlin Clark does not just get busy on the basketball court. She makes sure that you understand that she's getting busy on the basketball court.
Okay.
And the reason why this is a topic, most of you listening to this show, this became a national story because we're stupid. This didn't come a national story because of these two young ladies. Nothing that they did should have been newsworthy except be phenomenal basketball players, mm-hmm. both of them. And I mean phenomenal, not, oh, she's pretty good. Or even more ignorantly, oh, she's pretty good for a girl. No, 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 no. These two young ladies will probably give Ramses and I the business game after game after game. And we would just be tired and whooped. Like that's all we would have to say. So if you've watched either of them play, they might be two of the best to ever play.
Mm.
Except every conversation from the time that game ended until today about the two of them have been about the color of their skin and the way that what they do is received by public eye. If Q and Ramses were playing basketball, or Shaq and Kobe, or Michael and LeBron, or any Magic and Bird, any of your great rivals that you think in your head, or great players that you think in your head, were playing against each other and they were talking trash, black or white, as long as they were men, they'd be celebrated for it. Caitlin got celebrated for it. ESPN did an entire segment with different players talking about how she's the clapback queen because of how effectively she trash talks when she plays. She's demonstrative. Again, it's not just that the ball keeps going in. It's that she keeps reminding you that, ironically, you can't see me. For our audience, most of you, just by hearing what I said, know what that means. But during the tournament, during the season, everything from pulling her jersey up to yelling at the crowd to dismissing opponents, waving them off to shoot wide open because she didn't respect them enough to even guard them. You're that trash. I'm going to just let you shoot. Self-check. You on our team. Go for it. I'm going to wave you off and walk away while you shoot and miss this shot. Right? It's mental manipulation on a level that I don't know that I see regularly. You know what I mean? Like, this is Division One. This is the championship rounds. This is the essentially the playoffs. This is the tournament. Mm-hmm. She's walking away from the number one. This is the number one team in the country, undefeated. She's like, whatever. I'm not even going to guard you. Go for it. In another game, she told a young lady that said something to her, shut up, y'all losing by 15. And did the you can't see me to her. Right,
you can't see me is waving your hand in front of your face.
Yeah. John Cena made this thing popular. Tony Yayo introduced it to him. Flavor Flav introduced it to him. I have to say that because everybody just says it's the John Cena because mm-hmm. he's the most famous of them from being a WWE superstar and doing it in front of hundreds of millions of people on TV. It became known as something that he did. Mm-hmm. But even in interviews, he says he got it from Tony Yayo, who got it from Flavor Flav. So that specific thing, once they won, this is the thing about trash talk. This is why I don't understand why people do. I guess I do. People kind of get off on it. I don't understand why fighters do it because fighting is a whole different thing. That's not even, that's different from sport. You know, you don't play fight, you know, somebody might knock you out.
Yeah.
And then you look really ridiculous if you was just trash talking the whole lead up. But
well, I've seen that happen too.
Yeah. So when Caitlin Clark is winning and she's doing that, she celebrates. Like I said, they call her the clapback queen. They talk about how fiery she is, how competitive. People celebrate that in her. So when they lost, the other best player on the court,
Angel Reese,
Bayou Barbie, gave her all she can handle of her own doing.
This is the hand waving, you can't see me.
You can't see me,
okay.
Right back at her.
Okay.
But a lot. Like, we just popped y'all. And last week, you can't see me. Where you at now? Because that's how it goes.
Yeah.
When you talk crazy, you better win.
Yeah.
If you don't, you deserve to be clapped back at, quote unquote, since she's the clapback queen, crazy.
Yeah.
So, Queen Angel Reese of the national champion LSU Tigers has been called by professionals in sports media classless, an idiot, a moron, and a few of those with an effing on the front of it. She's been insulted and dragged as unsportsmanlike and disrespectful. All she did was the same thing that ESPN did a whole segment on Caitlin Clark for doing.
John Cena shouted out Caitlin Clark too on Twitter.
If you saw the coverage of the tournament, everyone did.
Hmm.
Right? The team that they beat before they played LSU had won like 50 games in a row. Like, undefeated national championship team. And all the coverage was about the super bad white girl for Iowa, not the whole team of sisters that was undefeated. Like, it was flagrant. And we've gotten to this space where pointing out double standards like this and pointing out just flagrant overt racism is somehow intellectually beneath us. So even we like take the devil's advocate position of trying to find justification for it when it's no. We don't even have to find anything. We have video of Caitlin doing the exact same thing. And then the number one sports outlet on earth did a full segment on how great it is that she does that. And the second a black girl did it to her, she became, again, classless, unsportsmanlike, an idiot, and a moron. And like I said, an effing. So we don't have to try to dig and figure out why it's covered differently. We don't have to dig and figure out why people are responding to it differently. Because you know who wasn't offended? You know who didn't call her out of her name? Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
Because Caitlin Clark get busy.
Yeah.
And in her mind, oh, I'll see you again.
Yeah.
And we're going to get right back at it. She knows that she gives that and deserves to get it back, a la Steph Curry. I can't get mad when they shimmy, I shimmy. You know what I mean? So it's this position of her being somehow this victim when all that was done to her is what she does to everybody else.
I want to add something here. Please. I read an article from New York Post. But there was an interview with Caitlin Clark. She's the white woman in this story. Again, forgive me, I'm not a sports person and I'm awful with names, so I repeat them just in case you're like me. But Caitlin Clark did an interview, and to your point, she said, I haven't been on social media since we lost, and I'm not mad at it. She gave like an amazing interview. Like, I was like pretty close to, man, she should be the Baba for this week, because she spoke up for Angel Reese, saying everything that you would expect. She's like, she's an amazing competitor that's part of the game, you know, blah, blah, blah. There was a couple of things I wish she would have said, but that but that doesn't mean that she intentionally left them out.
Mm-hmm.
It probably didn't occur to her to say things a certain way, or like, hey, this coverage is unfair. Maybe she doesn't have the same context or the same view. Maybe she's been absent. But I did appreciate her response, the way she bigged up Angel Reese. And she, so another part of this story that you, our listener, may or may not have heard about is that Jill Biden, the first lady.
Say her name again, because it's Jill and Joe. Sound Jill, the same.
Jill, doctor, I should say, Dr. Yes. Jill Biden,
yes,
the first lady of the United States, invited the losing team along with the winning team to the White House, right? And I guess that that's never been done before. And what folks
not
saying,
in 200 years.
Sure, sure. And so what people
were close to, this started back in the 1800s. I'll just say that.
So what people were saying is, and you could correct me or jump in, because
I'm absolutely certain whatever you're about to say is going to be accurate.
Okay. So what they were saying is, well, you know what? If we had lost, if LSU, Louisiana State University, had lost, Dr. Jill Biden would not have invited all the black girls to the White House having lost. So this is what it means to be white on full display, because she's like, oh, well, both teams were really competitive and they did a really great job. Let's have them all come to the White House. And so I believe it was Angel Reese and her team. I think that there's some sort of like unity in this decision. I'm not sure. Correct me if I'm wrong. But they said, you know what? It's OK. You can take the losing team to the White House. That's totally fine. We would go and hang out with Barack and Michelle. You know what I mean? Like that would be fine for us, you know? So the reason I brought that up is because Caitlin Clark was asked about that. Would she visit the White House if that invitation from Dr. Jill Biden was authentic, was genuine? And Caitlin Clark said, no, I would not go. That's not how it works. Angel Reese and the ladies from LSU deserve to have their moment. So this is part of why I was like, man, that feels like a Baba for us. You know what I mean? Like
I don't know that that's Baba worthy.
I know. That's why it's not there.
Of saying that what usually happens should happen.
But you know, some people don't do that.
No, you're right.
So that's why I was kind of thinking about it. But anyway, there's a double standard for you there. Let's move on. All right. So this one comes from CNN. I'll just read it. Q's going to get mad, and I see steam already coming out of his ear.
I might walk out of the studio.
Bro. He sent this one over for this week.
Might walk out of the studio.
I'll read it. The executive director of a police union in California has been placed on leave and is facing federal charges after allegedly importing drugs from overseas and distributing them throughout the country. I'll read the first part of that again. The executive director of a police union in California has been placed on leave. I didn't say under arrest, on leave. Okay. All right. I'll continue.
Likely paid.
Joanne Marion Segovia, 64, ordered thousands of synthetic opioids, including Valeral fentanyl, that were disguised as chocolates, wedding favors, and makeup, according to the criminal complaint filed Monday by the Office of the United States Attorney. Segovia, who serves as the executive director of the San Jose Police Officers Association, allegedly used her personal and office computers to order the opioids and made shipments using the union's UPS account, the complaint said. So, what we have here is the police bringing in drugs and distributing them throughout the country.
Don't say that like that, Ramses. Drug trafficking. Say it how they would say it if it was you. They wouldn't say Ramses is bringing in drugs. They would make you sound as criminal as possible.
Okay, help me out. Go ahead. I'm loving it.
Drug trafficking.
Yeah.
Across borders.
Yeah. They would probably call me a thug too. Oh, right?
Probably. With that afro growing out of your head, yes. King thug.
Do you think they would call Joanne Marion Segovia, 64, a thug?
Under no circumstance.
Isn't that funny?
And, you know, use words like alleged here, but the evidence is overwhelming.
Yeah. It's on the computer. Right?
Yeah. She's not going to be called a thug at any point.
Yeah.
Well, somehow she'll end up the victim here. I'm certain.
So, well, I mean, leave tells me everything I need to know, because as you know, we're talking about double standards. So let's just lean into this one. Let's say I was a police officer, right? Do you know how many police officers they would send to my house? They would beat me up a little bit and arrest me in front of my children.
Well, they would make sure there were cameras.
Sure.
At the ready.
So that it looked like they were doing their job.
That they were bringing down justice on one of their fellow officers.
Yeah. They got one of the bad ones.
One of the bad ones.
Yeah.
The bad apples.
So, again, this illuminates a very different, and these examples, we're not stretching at all for these examples. They're very, very obvious. These aren't obscure little stories or whatever. This is, you can see this in your own mind's eye, how this would play out differently if this was not a 64-year-old white woman with, I think she has blonde hair, right? Americans love blonde hair. I love afros, man. That's why I got them. I mean, I got mine and then my son's, you know. So we got them, I should say. Nothing wrong with people with blonde hair, though. We love y'all, too. Just, you know, that's how we do it over here. All right, let's move on. This one, we're going to kind of stand in solidarity with, again, with our trans friends. Because I think that this also shows an example of double standard in this country. So Q sent this one over, I believe. So I'll read. Tennessee State. By the way, Tennessee is tripping. I know, we know Tennessee is tripping right now. We just don't have enough show to get to everything.
Tennessee is tripping.
We know that. Please forgive us for not.
As is Florida.
Mm. So anyway, Tennessee State Representative Gloria Johnson had a discussion on the drag ban bill. I'm using air quotes because I think that's the name of it. Drag ban bill. Okay. The bill seeks to ban drag readings to children, right? So you might ask yourself, why do drag people need to read to children? If I'm honest, I don't know, but I suspect it probably has something to do with inclusivity and teaching children, exposing children to different types of people so that they don't grow up afraid or prejudiced or whatever, right? People who are trans people, you know, whatever the intention is there, I'm sure that there's some deeper purpose and it's not nearly as sinister as folks make it out to be, but that's not the point I'm trying to make right now. I just need to get past that because some people's minds go to like a really dark place. They think that, drag means sexual, you know, or something like that. Like if I were to say I sleep in the bed with my son, People get weird because they're like, you're not supposed to sleep in your bed. No, we're going to sleep. This is my child. You know, you know what I'm saying? So people's minds always go to this weird, weird sexual place with stuff. And I want to make sure that we're addressing that before we get here. Okay. So there are people, they dress up and then they read to children.
Okay. If you're with me, then allow me to read. This woman, Representative Gloria Johnson, asked her constituents about their feelings on wrestling, and she made some incredible points. She said, men wear tights and they wear makeup. And she made another interesting point by saying that drag, people that dress in drag, they often don't show any skin, and especially not at a school. They're fully dressed up, right? I don't imagine these drag shows are as popular as people are making them out to be, or like as common, you know, but the point is that wrestling is geared toward children, and no one has anything to say about that. So that's a glaring double standard right there. And then last but not least, I have to mention a double standard that came up this week as well. Representative Jasmine Crockett said on MSNBC, as she was discussing the January 6th choir song that went to number one on iTunes.
Wow.
She was describing how they went about making the song, right? She's like, hey, they had this equipment. They were able to put the song together and get this, you know, the president reading the Pledge of Allegiance and put out a song and went to number one. How is this possible? So she says, I've never seen tablets in prisons, and they use tablets to record this and text their family members.
And to review their own discovery.
Exactly. That too, with laptops and so forth. And I got to thinking, you know what? There's been so many rappers that have had to record their stuff over the phone. You know, some rap songs. I think Wayne did one of them, too, Lil Wayne. So anyway, I think that that also shows that there's a different way that the country treats people, you know, given the color of your skin. So with that said, we'll leave that right there. All right, now it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact, sponsored by Underground Beach Club. From the streets to the beach, for the finest in beachwear, visit undergroundbeachclub.com. And this comes from Wikipedia. You can look it up yourself. But you don't just have to use Wikipedia if you don't trust it, because it's everywhere. We're going to talk about California. California was named after a black woman. I was born in California, 1982. I lived 40 years of my life, and then I found that out. Isn't that weird? And you know what? Even the paintings of Khalifa, the ones that I found on the internet, and the paintings that I would come across when I was younger, not knowing this, none of them ever depicted her the way she's described in the story. But we'll get there. She should be real brown, but we'll get there. All right. Khalifa is the fictional queen of the island of California, first introduced by 16th century poet García Rodríguez de Montavio in his epic novel of chivalry, Las Sergas de Esplandian. I think I got that right. Written around 1510, the California is a region of North America encompassing the U.S. state of California and the Mexican states of Baja California and Baja California Sur, take their name from Califia and her kingdom. In the novel, Califia is a pagan warrior queen who ruled over a kingdom of black women living on the island of California, an island off the coast of Asia. Califia is convinced to raise an army of women warriors and sail away from California with a large flock of trained griffins so that she can join a Muslim battle against Christians who are defending Constantinople. In the siege, the griffins harm the enemy and friendly forces, so they are withdrawn. Califa and her ally Rodario fight in a single combat against the Christian leaders, a king, and his son, the knight Esplandian. Califia is bested and taken prisoner, and she converts to Christianity. She marries a cousin of Esplandian and returns with the remainder of her army to California for further adventures. All right, so that's the story in brief. The name of Califia was likely formed from the Arabic word Khalifia, which is
Khalifa.
Did I get that right? Khalifa. Oh, Khalifa. Very good. Religious state leader that is known as Caliph in English or Khalifa in Spanish. Similarly, the name of Califia's realm, California, likely originated from the same root fabricated by the author to remind the 16th century Spanish reader of the Reconquista, a centuries-long fight between Christian
Iberians and Muslim Arabs that had recently concluded in Spain. The character of Califia is used by Rodriguez de Montalvo to portray the superiority of chivalry, in which the attractive virgin queen is conquered, converted to Christian beliefs, and married off. The book was very popular for many decades. Hernán Cortés read it, and it was selected by author Miguel de Cervantes as the first of many popular and presumed harmful books to be burnt by characters in his famous novel, Don Quixote. Califia has been depicted as the spirit of California and has been the subject of modern day sculpture, paintings, stories, and films. She often figures in the myth of California's origin, symbolizing an untamed and bountiful land prior to European settlement. In 1937, Lucille Lloyd unveiled her triptych, mural, origin and development of the name of the state of California, also known as California Allegory, which was displayed at the State Building in Los Angeles until 1975, when the building was demolished for safety reasons. The paintings were archived, and in 1991, they were restored and mounted in the California Room of the California State Capitol, room 4203, renamed the John L. Burton Hearing Room. The regal central figure shows Queen Califia, depicted as a Mayan warrior princess holding a spear in her left hand and examining a gyroscope in her right. All right. In 1931, Diego Rivera finished his first U.S. mural, The Allegory of California, for the Pacific Coast Stock Exchange building, now the City Club of San Francisco. The publication of Our Roots Run Deep, The Black Experience in California, Volume 1, was the lead story in the Sunday Examiner and Chronicle on February 1, 1992, as reporter Greg Lewis pointed out the book's depiction of the Queen Califia's story as particularly noteworthy. An exhibition featuring Queen Califia followed in 1995 at the Historic State Capitol Museum in Sacramento, with subsequent showings in the sixth floor gallery of the San Francisco Main Library and the Los Angeles Central Library. In 1998, the California Council on Humanities funded the seminar The Black Queen, Primary Sources in California History, to promote additional primary source research in California African American history. The mural of Queen Califia is featured at the top of the new African American Freedom Trail brochure produced by Reunion Education Arts Heritage and San Francisco Travel in November 2013. In 2004, the African American Historical and Cultural Society Museum in San Francisco assembled a Queen Califia exhibit curated by John William Templeton, featuring works by artists such as the author Wright and James Gales, artistic interpretations of Califia. The show displayed a 1936 treatment of Lucille Lloyd's California Allegory triptych with Queen Califia as the central figure. Templeton said that Califia is a part of California history, and she also reinforces the fact that when Cortez named this place California, he had 300 black people with him. Templeton pointed out that Columbus had a black navigator and that Africans were seen by Europeans as being culturally advanced in the 15th century. William E. Hoskins, director of the museum, said that very few people know the story of Queen Califia. He said, "One of the things we're trying to do is let people have the additional insight and appreciation for the contributions of African Americans to this wonderful country, and more specifically to the state of California," adding that, quote, "the Queen Califia exhibit is particularly poignant." So, now, whenever I say California, I know that the lady on the, I think it's not the state flag, but there's like a, one of those flags that has that lady on it, and she's about as white as the flag, as the background of the flag, that was a reimagining of the original symbol of California, which depicted Queen Califia with her brown skin.
A very intentional reimagining.
Sure.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And so it's important to know that because that gives you another example of how history tends to get whitewashed and there's less for us to be proud of, even if it's just an imaginary story. You know, we inspired this man to write this novel and this queen who was so powerful. It's sad that that was taken away from us when the truth is, we should have grown up with that, I think. And little black girls should grow up with that.
There's no version of this country that allows us to grow up with that.
Well, I think we're getting closer.
but we'll leave it right there. So once again, I have to thank you for tuning in to Civic Cypher. I really do appreciate it. Once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. Thank you guys again. How else can they help, Rams?
Listen, hit the website, civiccypher.com. Using that website, you can submit any questions. You can hit us with any topics you want us to cover, make a donation. As I mentioned, donations help the show grow. We are growing. You can tap in with us on social media, except for Twitter.
Subscribe to the YouTube.
Subscribe to the YouTube.
Subscribe to the YouTube.com/CivicCypher. CivicCypher.
Yes. And all our social media is Civic Cypher as well, just like you spelled it. And of course, you can download this and any previous episode on your favorite podcasting platform. And I think that's going to do it. Anything else?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, then,
peace.
Hey, yo, we handle it. These brothers are fabulous. Dilated, showing you where rhyme travel is. Worlds are spit tunes from sunlight to moon. Bussing off stage like gunfight saloons. Pull my mic back, you like that? Journalists, we're journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander / beat expander. Here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse and resist.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Radioland. I am Eldridge Cleaver, the former Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio. I want you to listen to and support KBOO because Portland needs it, you need it, and the world needs it. Ubalagani, boing, boing.
During the last 6 weeks, you heard the special programming of our winter fundraising drive. Thank you for supporting Volume 2 of the All Thrills No